So thank you all for coming back to the Rebbe, and Rav Kook Kabura. So we went through three different kaburas about the role of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, and we saw a little bit about the basic methodology. And now I just want to go through over the next couple of weeks some of the nafkaminas of these methodologies and this relationship between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba as we've seen them in the thought of the Rebbe, and Rav Kook. The first topic I chose, not because it's the most important, just because it was something it came up in my life recently, was the perspective on secularism, meaning Western secular culture, and people who are part of Western secular culture. I mean, as a Torah, we have a certain belief system, we have a certain value system. We believe that Jews should be keeping 613 mitzvos, non-Jews should be keeping 7 mitzvos. Not all of these things are obeyed or fulfilled by every Jew, and not every non-Jew also fulfills whatever role non-Jews are supposed to have in this world. So I just want to give this is not like a formal study, but just give a sense based on several passages about the way the Rav spoke about his contemporary secular Western culture that he encountered, and then the way Rav Kook spoke about that same culture, that same value system, and the people who are, the Jews in particular, who are fully embedded in that value system, fully embedded in that culture. And I think it might be a little bit surprising the way the two of them speak about it, but as we'll see, it fits very well into the methodology and into the ideology. So for the Rav, I chose two pieces for the Rav speaks. That's the Chamesh Drashot. These are the major speeches he gave at the Mizrahi Convention about religious Zionism. Five of them were incorporated in a book called Chamesh Drashot, which was first it was in Yiddish, then translated to Hebrew, then it was translated to English. So this is the translation of the translation. And then the last one is from an article the Rav himself wrote, which he published in Tradition. So the Rav speaks, the first essay there talks about Yosef. Talks about how Yosef was ostracized by his brothers. Yosef was different than the rest of his brothers. He had a different vision for the future of the family. And how, in the end, Yosef's vision ended up saving the Jewish people, saving the family, and winning the day. And in the end, Joseph represents the religious Zionist movement and ends up representing himself. And the brothers end up representing the mainstream orthodoxy or anti-Zionist. So here's one passage about it. Agav Urkai is going to talk about secular culture. It says, the biblical Joseph relates, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bow down to me. There is secular culture, great and powerful technology, creating wonders and changing the foundations of our life. Even if it's true that in Canaan we can get along without it, this secular culture entails destructive elements, many negative and perverse aspects. It may be a blessing and a curse simultaneously. And thus, as long as one can live without it, so much the better for the spirit. Finally, we will have to relate to it. The conversation will not take place in Canaan, however, where life flows serenely, but in a new and alien land, where the tempo of life is greatly accelerated and fundamental changes occur daily. So what is the machlokas between Yosef and his brothers? They're talking about how to relate to secular culture. The brothers say, secular culture is a double-edged sword. Technology, science, advancements in civilizations, all of these things are great. We saw in Lonely Man of Faith, the rough things, advances in technology are a kiyum mitzvah, if you're using the right way, of milulos aretz v'kavshua. Advances in civilization are part of the Shabbos Yitzhara, part of milulos aretz v'kavshua. But at the same time, and almost every time the Rav speaks about secular culture, he praises the scientific and technological advancements, there's always the negative statement. The secular culture entails destructive elements, many negative and perverse aspects. It's a blessing and a curse. If you can live without it, let's live without it. That is the perspective of the brothers. Yosef says, that works here in Canaan. That works here in the ghettos of Europe. We can live without secular culture. We don't have to engage the positive aspects. We don't have to engage the negative aspects. But pretty soon, there's going to be an encounter. There's going to be a clash. We're going to be engaged and fully immersed in it. We have to have a perspective of how to deal with it. Etc., etc. So, secular culture is a double-edged sword. If you could avoid it. Now we're living in America. We're living in Israel. We've encountered it. We have to know how to deal with it.
You're saying that the Rav felt that only now in like the mid-1900s, it's time to approach secular culture?
Well, he's talking about the perspective of the brothers, meaning his father and his grandfather and the European Rabbanim, which is let's avoid it for as long as possible. Let's not.
Even according to you guys, it's time to.
Yosef said, the religious Zionist said, I mean, this is not talking about secular culture in general. This ends up talking more about Zionism. But we're going to have to engage the wider world at some point. let us develop a philosophy now of how to engage it. And the brothers ostracize him. And then in the end, Yosef, who goes to Mitzrayim, becomes a major cosmopolitan person, ends up saving the Jewish people. The religious Zionists who went to Israel, who built up a society there, are now the ones who are built the infrastructure to save Torah post-World War II, when all Jews are involved in the secular world. You see the way he describes the secular culture, destructive elements, many negative and perverse aspects. Maybe a blessing and a curse, as long as you can live without it, so much the better for the spirit. But at some point we're going to encounter it, so we have to develop a philosophy of how to deal with it. Turn the page. This is a later speech. This is about Avraham and Sarah. Sarah represents the heart of Judaism, the emotional warmth. Avraham represents submission to halacha, details the former halachic system. So let's start from the top. It says there are times when our adversaries did not wish to know either of Abraham or of Sarah. They thought that the secular world is unable to submit to the divine discipline of Abraham, nor find gratification in the grandeur of Sarah's religious experience. They claimed that these brought themselves a foundling from the marketplace, that both Abraham and Sarah will remain childless, since within the context of modern life, there is no place for Abraham's Shulchan Aruch or Sarah's service of the heart. The young generation is not their child, it's not the great party that Abraham had made for Isaac, that both of them, Abraham as well as Sarah, delude themselves if they think that they can hand over anything to Isaac. Some people think that Avraham's submission to halacha, Sarah's great religious experiences, can't be transferred to the next generation. Thus claimed the Hellenizers during the period of the Second Temple that this was what Jewish agnostics said after them, and this was the claim of Jewish socialists at the turn of the present century. They thrust everything aside, they wanted to eradicate everything and to forget everything. But times have changed. Modern man, despite his enormous technological victories, feels that he is alone, suffering from boredom, a feeling of frustration and defeatism. He is beginning to sense that without God, life is gloomy. Without aim, without content, he is beginning to look for a way back to the master of the world. How is secular Jews described? They did an experiment. They tried to cut themselves off from both aspects of the Masorah. Great technological achievements, great advances in civilization, but the end game is feeling of aloneness, suffering, boredom, frustration, defeatism. He calls it, they made a mockery of life on the next page. He calls it something which is absurd, what they tried to do. The Rav sees value in secular people. He, and at a personal, interpersonal level, he was very, very courteous, very cordial with anybody he met. But in terms of secular people, secular ideology, a godless society, and secular Jews, a Jewish atheist, he did not necessarily see any value in that philosophy. In fact, it leads to the opposite. It leads to boredom, leads to defeatism, it leads to a meaningless life. Look at the next page. Also, very condemning statements about modern culture. Redemption Prayer in Talmud Torah is an essay basically tracing the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, talking about what a slave-like mentality is and what the nature of redemption is. It's a very, very beautiful essay. So this is one aspect, talking about the slavery of modern man. So he says, modern man is a slave because modern man is unaware of his own basic needs. And then he says as follows. As many would say that to accuse modern man of being unaware of his needs is absurd. The reverse, they would maintain, is true. Modern man is aware of many needs. In fact, there are too many needs which claim his attention. An entire technology is bent upon generating more and more needs in order to give man the opportunity to derive pleasure through the gratification of artificially fabricated needs. Right? We just went through a Cyber Monday and a Black Friday. Convince people they need more things, they're going to buy them. Though this assertion is true, it does not contradict my previous statement that contemporary man is unaware of his needs. Man is surely aware of many needs, but the needs he is aware of are not always his own. At the very root of his failure to recognize one's truly worthwhile needs lies man's ability to misunderstand and misidentify himself, i.e. to lose himself. Quite often man loses himself by identifying himself with the wrong image. Because of this misidentification, man adopts the wrong table of needs which he feels he must gratify. Man responds quickly to the pressure of certain needs, not knowing whose needs he's out to gratify. At this juncture, sin is born. What is the cause of sin, if not the diabolical habit of man to be mistaken about his own self? Again, what is the condemnation of modern culture? Modern culture creates needs, creates artificial needs for the person. people think they need certain things. They forget about what they really truly need, which is connection to God, connection to other people, a basic morality in their lives, some sense of spirituality. All of those things are forgotten, and therefore people forget themselves. Once people forget themselves, Rav goes on to say, it causes a lot of social ills, and it causes people to wander around the world alone, defeated, thinking about the meaninglessness and absurdity of life. Again, a condemnation, an indictment of modern secular culture. The person who gathered a lot of these sources together is somebody named Dr. Avi Sagi. He teaches, and he's a PhD in Hebrew U in Jewish philosophy. He publishes from the Hartman Center, from the Hartman Institute. So he has his book about how different modern Jewish thinkers dealt with secular culture and dealt with secular Jews. So he said, you might think the Rav, who knew all this stuff, was intimately familiar with secular culture, who was probably the best well-read rabbi, traditional rabbi in Western philosophy that existed since the times of the Rambam, you'd think he would be more open to these things. And the Rav definitely saw a lot of value in the philosophy, in the technology, in a lot of aspects of modern life. But the culture that it produces without Torah, without God, is not something which the Rav gives legitimacy to. It's not something which he sees value in. And over and over and over again in his writings, you see this condemnation, this indictment of the culture that secular Western society created for itself. And what's the resolution? The resolution is going to be to return to God. And we're going to see this is very different than the way the Rav treats other religions. The way the Rav treats Christianity is with the utmost respect. He thinks they're wrong. He obviously thinks that Judaism is the correct religion. But he treats them as another faith group, another legitimate autonomous faith group that we shouldn't try to corrupt. He gives it legitimacy. We'll see that in a later chaburah. Secular culture, the Rav doesn't give legitimacy to. Certain aspects of it, it did amazing things for civilization, but the culture itself breeds all of these negative results. Why? So I think what Avi Sagi says is that this fits in with epistemological pluralism, fits in with the philosophy of the Rav. Each discipline has to use its own methodology to develop its own worldview. If you're a Christian, use Christianity to develop your own worldview. If you're a psychologist, use psychology to develop your own worldview. If you're trying to be Jewish and you are developing a worldview that doesn't have anything to do with halakha, and you're becoming a secular Jew, or you're a human being, and you're using an incorrect methodology, meaning you're taking God out of the picture, and you're developing a methodology of how to view life without the base, without the ABCs, without the raw data that you need, you're just going to end up in a completely erroneous place. And there's no reason to give legitimacy to a completely erroneous philosophy. It's like if a Jewish person would create a philosophy about Judaism that nothing to do with halakha. Secular Jewish values aren't necessarily legitimized, don't have the basis behind them, because you're doing the philosophy in a completely incorrect way. Almost the opposite is the case when you get to Rav Kook. Of Rav Kook, the passages I have here are more about philosophies than about culture. But look at the second source I have over here. Orot HaKodesh Chelek Aleph, Piska Yud Gimel. This is one of the more famous pieces from Rav Kook about this issue. Orot HaKodesh Chelek Aleph basically deals with epistemology, with how we know what we know, and different thought systems. At the very beginning, the Nazir put this passage. It says, Kol Makshavot Tegyoniotein. All thoughts are logical. They all fit. Every single thought that was ever thought by a person has a place in the systematic thought system of the world. Even those things that we think as mud, we think as half-baked, when you look at the source of those thoughts, you'll see how they have a place somewhere in the source of logic in God. That is the way thought functions. There is no thought, there's no culture, there's no system that is completely batel, that is completely meaningless, that doesn't have any value to it. There's no nothing that doesn't have its place. In the mission of Pirkei Avos, everything is from the source of chachma. Chachma, probably the technical term, chachma, the sphere of chachma. Everything has a source somewhere in God. He says, if you think you encounter a thought system, you think you encounter a half-baked idea, which doesn't have any value in it, you have to look deeper at the sources of that ideology, and you will find that it hits upon and reveals a certain aspect of divinity. Look at the bold of parts. The choma shiita leha adam yotzer, as much as the person elevates themselves, choma sheshayichuso hi yotzer gidola l'tochon apnimi shalvav achayim, the more in tune you are with the inner content of life, hari lokeach mikol makshava bein shu shalo bein shi shalachirim, and zagarina hanitzki aguni hatoch anoveh mimkor hachokma. You will be able to look around the world at every single ideology that exists, every single way of life, and figure out the inner nekuda of that ideology that stems from God, that reveals another aspect of divinity. And you will then be able to elevate yourself based on your newfound discovery of that ideology. And that ideology gets elevated through your recognition of its proper place in the scheme of things. Rav Kook, again, is not coming from a place of epistemological pluralism, that each discipline has its own methodology, and you have to figure things out. Jewish methodology has to be based on halacha. Human methodology about meaning in life has to be based on God. Otherwise, you're going to reach erroneous conclusions. Rav Kook is coming from a place of kenentheism. Everything is manifestation of God. Same way everything in Olam Hazeh, all the physical matter of Olam Hazeh, are manifestations of divinity one way or another. Every ideology, every culture is also going to be a manifestation of divinity one way or another. It might take a tzaddik, it might take somebody who has inner wisdom to be able to look at an ideology and say, this is the proper point, this is a positive nekuda that this ideology is bringing to the world, but that is the avoda of people in our generation, is to look around at every ideology and be able to differentiate the negative consequences of that ideology, but always identify the inner nekuda that's positive about it. One of the most radical pieces is if we turn the page back to the bottom of the previous one, Arpele Tohar. I forgot, I didn't have the exact page number, so I didn't put it on. Arpele Tohar was something Rav Kook himself published. It's in Shmona Kvatzim, it's Kovetz Beis. Rav Kook told his students he wanted at least one thing to come out from him unedited. So Arpele Tohar came out. The irony is that the second printing of Arpele Tohar was already edited, and then the third printing went back to the original. This was one of the pieces that was edited in the second version of Arpele Tohar. It goes as follows. It says, "V'umat ha'emet ha'yona alokit," corresponding or in relation to the supernal truth of God, "ein hevdel bin ha'emuna ha'mitzayer la'kfira." There is no real distinction between our image of emuna, of faith, our dogma, and heresy. "Shtehen einon mutnot et emes," neither one give the full truth. Anything which you think about is always going to not fully describe God. Everything always stems from God. There's some element of divinity in the Elmuna that we believe in. There's also some element of divinity in the what we call heresy. Ella, so what's the difference? Ella shehemuna mitkarevet ugambe didan el ha'amet. Emuna brings us closer to that divine truth. But kfira ella sheker. We'll probably have one class on pluralism, which connects to this a little bit. Rav Kook didn't differentiate categorically between different ideas. Everything is sourced in divinity. Some ideas lead you closer to God, some ideas lead you further away from God if you take them at face value. But everything at its core is always going to be based in the single idea of God. Great. The entire world with all of its value, material value and spiritual value, everything is subjective from our perspective. From our perspective, what we call Amunah, 13 Ikarim of the Rambam, bring us closer to the truth. From our perspective, kfira, heresy, brings us further away from the truth. But But even that kfira itself that we can't believe in, we have to recognize in the back of our minds, has some divine light in it. And because from God's perspective, everything is the same, so to speak, that's what allows the tzaddikim of each generation, and I've put this as an avoda and almost everybody as you get closer to Mashiach, is to look around and see the positive value, the divine light that's embedded in every ideology in the world. So Rav Kook will also have pieces lambasting and indicting certain aspects of secular Western culture. His entire perspective is going to be based differently. Rav Soloveitchik, ideas don't have inherent divine value in and of themselves. You have to know your methodology, know what the sources are, know how to apply the sources. If you don't do that properly, you're going to end up in a very bad place. For Rav Kook, you might end up in a very bad place, but the basis of every ideology is always going to be divine and positive, and necessary to be revealed in order to be put together with everything else to recreate the picture that God has for this world. And this is really the basis for why Rav Kook was able to look at secular Jews who were atheists, Jews who were not shomei Torah mitzvos, and seeing them, people who weren't being defeated, gloomy, lonely, and leading meaningless lives, but people who actually had more divine light in them, and therefore weren't able to fully be at peace with the religion, with the organized religions as they knew it. The last source over here is from Maamar Hadar. This is Rav Kook's famous essay describing the nature of the generation he encountered, the secular generation, the generation that went off to Derech. And you will see that he describes them in a mixed light, but ultimately in a very positive light. And it comes from this panentheism that he saw, that every ideology has to fit in somewhere, has to have some element of divine light. Jews, especially Jews who are coming back to Eretz Israel, all the more so, their ideology is going to be based on the divine light. So instead of lambasting the negative aspects of the culture and their ideology, let's see what the positive light is, embrace it, embrace that positive element, and try to inculcate it and let it flourish, as opposed to focusing on the negatives. So let's just read it very quickly. It says, Muzar hu adar hazeh. This generation, the secular generation of young Jews, is strange. Shubavu. It's wild. Parahi, it's wild. Avagan na'alav nisah. But it's also very elevated. Skip down because of the time. Skip down to the fourth line. Chilek gadol mehador tzair. It's right after the period. This chilek gadol mehador tzair, a large part of this younger generation that went up to Derech, inino chash kol kavod v'kol masher hurgal. They don't feel any honor, any respect for what it was accustomed to previously. Lo mivnei sheufla nafshol, not because its soul is darker. Lo mivnei shenishpal miotol gavul, not because it is lower than the boundaries of organized religion in previous generations. Shechokom mishpat omdim ala b'deya hamonit v'hargila, ki im ipnei sha'ala ar mako, shilfi oto et tzibion shurgal bo ad ko, shiobit al yidon al chokom mishpat, al masoret v'amuna b'chlal, al kol ha-torah b'kadosh, kol emet g'dolam nitzkit ulokit ha-shevim misagim, nei mi'ut ha-avodah v'tamudam, shal yusodei ha-rega shadat shevim rakah v'torah, huam z'ab sunei ha-katam ha-tov, achin ninmen lo shakol shafel harbe me'erko. It's a run-on sentence. What's he saying? The reason why they went off the Derech is not because they are bad people. It's because their souls are so high that they don't relate to, they don't recognize religion as it is now. They demand more. They demand higher ideals. They demand higher values. They demand more dedication. They demand something deeper, a more full presentation of what Judaism is all about. That's why Rav Kook says you have to start teaching Jewish history, Jewish philosophy, teach them Kabbalah, teach them all these things that weren't taught previously. But the foundational point is that these people were off to there. How should I look at them? Should I look at them as they're secular people, their ideology is based on a falsehood, therefore that should be my perspective about them? Or no, every ideology, especially one coming out of Jews, has to have some divine light in it. Let me identify what the inner core of their ideology is, then I'll be able to know how to treat them in a positive way, teach them, and allow that inner core to flourish. And we'll see, this is something which is systematic between Rav Kook and the Rav. The Rav, again, a very halakhic thinking. If it's halakhic, if it's scientific, it's good. If not, the experiential side has to be there as well, as we'll see. But if something is not following the proper methodology, it's incorrect. For Rav Kook, there's nothing that is categorically incorrect. Everything has some divine light in it. And now as a generation, when we see the divine light in the world, we're supposed to look around the world and see divinity wherever we go, we're supposed to be doing that with ideologies and secular ideologies and secular Jews in particular. So thank you so much. I hope everybody has a nice day.